Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. We are diving into, currently, what we call the Bill of Rights for the 21st century. For a lack of a better way of putting it, these are not amendments. I don't want anybody to think we're out here trying to create amendments to the Constitution. What we are doing is we're demanding the government catch up to the 21st century in recognizing we still have these rights, and it doesn't matter what technology has done. If they want to start applying, you know, these changes to our fundamental rights of privacy, our fundamental rights of property, our fundamental rights of being able to choose our representative and have a Republican form of government, we have constitutional protected rights. And we need our states to start demanding that we have our constitutional rights protected and recognized. That's why we're definitizing the Constitution. And so there's probably no better discussion of having this topic in going through every single one of these issues that we absolutely need to talk about. Now, forgive me, I'm really bad with names. But there was a gentleman that sent me an email when I was talking about finances and the federal government having these loans out there for student debt and all of that. And that doesn't happen to necessarily be on these issues. That's really what we kind of brushed over regarding those rights or the roles, responsibilities, and powers that the federal government has jurisdiction over. So as we get into that, because it was brought up, it was by somebody else, but I engaged, and I forget the guy's name, forgive me, whoever you were. If I could go through my emails and find out who the gentleman was, but nevertheless, it was brought up by a different individual, you know, about the finances that didn't come out of, or I should say the debt, the shenanigans that the federal government is doing in creating debt for student loans, but more importantly, taking on debt and this unconstitutional debt crisis that they're creating. They're going to use this crisis against us, folks. But the point in fact is they have no constitutional authority to spend all of this money. What they have done, and if the states do it right, they will call out the federal government. When they say, hey, you know, we're at a point where we can't afford this anymore. At that point in time, and hopefully even before, the states will actually take a stand and say, you know what, you have no right creating this debt. As a matter of fact, you've been defrauding us, and you need to come to grips with, you know, the supreme law of the land and the fact that you need to now communicate to these people that you conspired with in creating all of these negotiated debts, treaties, and everything else, and say, you know what, sorry, we're not going to be able to pay you because we had no authority of doing this. And there's no doubt in my mind that these people knew this. There's no doubt that they knew what was going on. And they were complicit in supporting, in trying to undermine our Constitution and our government. Because America must fall for the world global alliance to truly happen. And I don't believe it will truly happen. I believe that when America backs out, all the rest of the focus will be turned on Israel. I think it's biblical, folks. We have to start doing this, and you need to be on the right side of history because the annals of history are being written as we speak. And I want you to have a complete understanding of what all of this stuff means, okay? It's that simple. So, as we move forward, where we left off was delineating, and we were talking about financial currencies and so forth. And so one of the things that we, you know, want to get into after we get into the obligatories is kind of recover that ground. I want to go back over a couple things because we didn't get a chance to finish through it. I only had 3 minutes. So As you know, you're listening to the only show that gives you the academic evidence and the academic evidence-based solutions. We are on Rumble, or we were on Rumble today, and I hope you caught it. And those of you who want to have a mechanism of somebody asking questions or what have you, they do it live. So if you happen to catch us, we actually have a live conversation. And so hopefully you can start engaging with David Torres. He needs some help as well, but one of the things I truly appreciate is what they are doing is they are trying to translate all of this stuff that we're doing into Spanish, okay? So with that, we, you know, just looking to move forward. We've got Fortitude Financial Coaching that we highly recommend if you're looking to finally change your debt to income, your financial security, your overall financial health. Free constitution classes for those who are looking for a good educational mechanism for your children, constitutioneducation.us. Timber Nation, hardwood quality furniture. You won't be going wrong. This is definitely something that you need to get involved with. And so, you know, if you want to have furniture that is going to last for a long time. Now, I will also say the Timber Nation, you know, is willing to do anything that you want. You know, all you've got to do is come up with an overall plan and they will basically, you know, try to, actualize that for you. But anyway, RadioDustCovers.com, if you're looking to protect your electronics, our comment line, 425-270-5416. We know that there's plenty of marketing. The news, the pornography news cycle never ends. And so we just want to help you realize that as the longer you focus on these issues, whether you think they're important or not, it doesn't really matter. What really matters is stopping the loss of liberty and stopping the erosion of our constitutional rights and stopping them and taking back our republic. That simple. Okay, so when we kind of left off, we really defined the fact that money is a medium of exchange and currency that becomes the actual property of one who accepts it for exchange of goods or services. A person has a constitutional right to hold and to physically possess their property. Now, we kind of went through the fact that the states have the right to coin money, and you'll find that in Article 1, Section... actually, the federal government has the right, and that's in Article 1, Section 8, over the coining of money and regulating that thereof and of foreign coin. In other words, the exchange of foreign currencies. Article 1, Section 10, Subsection 1, no state shall make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payments of debt. So in other words, the states can't go out and say, we're going to make something. You have to change the Constitution for the states to allow cryptocurrency to be used. They have to actually start changing the Constitution, but they're going to say, well, we don't need to because this is a power or no, this is a very specific power and delegated responsibility of physical security. If you want to go down a different path, because they're going to try to sell us on this concept, folks, that, you know, money, you know, counterfeiting is so out of hand that it is just depleting us of our, you know, our money. Well, how many newspaper prints and how many news articles are you reading where counterfeiting in our currency is a real problem? How bad is this, what do they call that when somebody counterfeits money? Counterfeiting. But, you know, how bad is that? I mean, is there a ring in organized crime? I mean, there's money laundering and we hear about that, but give me a real national crisis of how they are, you know, being able to counterfeit with all of the changes they have done to our bill system, our physical printing of money. How? Where? Are you kidding me? And so what we actually have to do is we have to get back to the constitutional standing of having a gold-backed and or a precious metal-backed currency, period. Now, this is where we have to do this. Therefore, Congress only has the power to coin money or create money of or based upon the backing of gold and silver, period. That's what's in the Constitution. They cannot change that. They changed it and they violated the Constitution. This has to be identified that they have to go back to this. This right and power of the state prohibits both the federal government and state governments from making or allowing digital currency to actually become a real thing. Okay, so all currency must be based and backed by physical gold and or silver and or both. The paper money that was instituted by the general government back in the, well, if you actually look at it, when FDR started playing with it, then, you know, we can actually see how they started manipulating our currency and basically pushing us down this road of no longer having a gold and silver backed currency. So anyway, bottom line, we have to get back to that. They're violating the Constitution, both state and federal governments, and we have to make these things a primary campaign issue because it's all about our rights, folks. And these are big fundamental rights. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL. Or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416. Okay, so one of the things I've also talked about, and this has to be a discussion, because now that we're seeing all of these corporations and software companies that have been basically taking advantage of patent laws and so forth, it's kind of like, I understand protecting art and protecting original creation, but when we start looking at applications and when we start looking at databases and functions and so forth, and the fact that they protect their licenses for, you know, an insane amount of time, when the fact is that, let's just look at Windows 7. Windows 7 comes out and creates this licensing that, you know, forever locks Windows 7 into this long, huge term contract. And they have all sorts of openings within these contracts that we'll get to in a different point regarding your privacy and those types of things. But the fact is that they're creating these patent laws when really what they're defining as this new operating system is really just an old remade one. They're not actually creating a new operating system. It's not like they just invented the, you know, for a, you know, lack of thinking of a different one, but something that had a historical context, the cotton gin. I mean, here was a brand new piece of equipment that came forth that changed the direction of this nation regarding slavery. And so, but here was a piece of machinery that was patented. We actually have to look into patent laws and copyrights and those types of things. Article 1, Section 8, Subsection 10 basically states that the Congress has the power to promote the progress of science and useful arts by securing for limited times to authors and inventors the exclusive right to their respective writings and discoveries. Now, when we hear this idea of securing for authors and inventors, what happens? And so I just want you to understand that many inventions are done by people, but the corporations unconstitutionally take full rights and claims to that because this person is working for the company and they're doing that. They actually have to stop doing that. As a matter of fact, companies, corporations that get away with robbing the creativity of their employees by saying, well, because you did that working for us, we own that. That has to change. Corporations and companies cannot actually have the full credit. They actually have to come up with a mechanism of truly, not just incentivizing, but truly recognizing who the inventors were and what they did and giving them the, let's just call it royalties or a part of that. But here's the thing. The life cycle has to be shorter. These patents are way too long. Initially, these patent laws protected intellectual property for up to 14 years. I think that's too long. That was in the old days. We have this thing called, it's called Moore's Law, right? Or hold it, no. Yeah, I think it's Moore's Law. Anyway, I know I'm going to get... because they do these things that, you know, they assign these names, and yours truly is really name challenged. What I would just tell you is that there's this concept that technology continually laps itself every 18 months. In other words, things get twice as fast. Things, you know, get, you know, be able to store twice the amount of data. Networks improve. All of these different things constantly improve. And so the fact is that 14 years in technology's realm is way too long. And as a matter of fact, the companies that create these long-term patents, you know, they actually have to start either acknowledging that is a short-lived technology. And as far as I'm concerned, when it comes to computers and technology, for the most part, I think 18 months to 2 years should be more than sufficient. Companies, when a corporation buys computer equipment, it typically depreciates that over a 5-year period because that's how we legally do this now. These patent laws that are giving these companies, you know, these lockdowns for this incredible amount of time is one, it's almost puts us into a usury state or a slavery state to corporations. And two, it hinders, you know, competition and it hinders creativity. Today, utility patents last 20 years, copyrights last 70 after the death of the actual author, and trade secrets can be indefinite, folks. We can't allow, because what this does is it creates these opportunities of government-protected monopolies. because who is it that's protecting these trade secrets? Well, it's obviously government. Much of the software and hardware world that tech is dependent upon is not original and is simply innovations of technology. Consequently, much of these patents should not last for such long periods. They should actually be shorter scaled to 18 months to 2 years, because it's not like they went out and created SCSI commands. That was created decades ago, and I literally mean decades ago. SCSI commands were back in the 80s, but they still use SCSI commands now over the network, over SAN, over all of these different types of storage and data. They just have a different mechanism of communicating those. But down at the hardware level on storage devices, those SCSI commands are still being executed. So you can't tell me that they actually invented something that is doing something. They're just improving how they're, you know, sending those communications instead of over a copper wire or, you know, some old arcane technology. They've come up with a new medium like fiber channel instead of copper, or instead of networking, creating a fiber channel network and so forth. So we have to really force, because if you want to understand the cost of doing business, when corporations and companies can lock in the manufacturing of televisions even, and the little innovations that they're putting into the television, this goes back to the old CRT tube. And I'm going to go down a rat hole real quick, but the old CRT tube, when the old CRT tube went to these projectors, these large definition HD big box projectors, everybody's seen them. You may have had a projector TV instead of a cathode ray tube. They were much lighter. They were a little bit more easier to, you know, to move and so forth, but they weren't necessarily a superior technology, and flat screens was a huge jump from that. But for the longest time, they were making minute innovations and changes and minor improvements. I mean, Mitsubishi was a very competitive producer of flat, or these big, huge projector televisions. And as a matter of fact, what we're looking at is that they, because they created this manufacturing cycle, what they wanted to do was continually protect themselves over the course of what they wanted to capitalize the profits off of that tooling change for manufacturing. So when they went from CRT tubes to just projector televisions, they had to basically retool their assembly line and all of that. And in so doing, but see, what they did was they actually went out and created a whole new production line. They didn't actually retool and shut down the old, because they were still selling. There's always this overlap. Bottom line, friends, we have to look at shortening and not allowing these companies, because by having these long-term patents, because in so doing, what it does is it hinders the ability to sometimes even innovate some of that technology. Now, one of those things that we actually have to do is we have to consider what the intent behind this is. And the real intent behind this is to promote science and useful arts, and providing, instead of providing these indefinite patents, we need to then create, you know, shorter patent periods, because then it doesn't become such a hindrance to innovations. And so as technology that moves forward, we the people really need to start looking at this, because when we look at technology and how China constantly steals our technology, you know, but that technology, again, they just constantly steal the innovations as well. We have to actually start recognizing, regarding patents and technologies, any country that is manufacturing products that are, you know, stealing technology, we have to shut down the ability of any American company from doing business with that country, or countries that are associated with that country. In other words, Vietnam, you know, because they are basically a puppet for the Chinese Communist Party. So we have to start standing up for property rights and start standing up for at least these patent rights, but the patent rights have to be completely revisited. We need to shorten them, because we want innovation. We want competition. We do not want to create all of these little archaic monopolies that seem to last and last and last, and the government is the one that's actually doing this to us. So, moving on, the right of conscience as property. The fact is, you have a right to think and say and, you know, have your own paradigm. This is one of your most precious rights. This is why we provided you Madison's essay on property. There is nothing probably more precious than your property rights of your conscience and your thoughts. So we're going into a break. When we come back, we're going to fly through the right of consciousness as property and how we need to get the states big on actually taking a stand on this. We will be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contribution page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416. Okay, so moving into what we refer to as the right of conscience. I mean, this goes all the way back to, you know, those times where, you know, the remonstrance on religion. The essence of liberty, this goes all the way back to the Magna Carta. I can't emphasize this enough. We have to start looking at how we think and how we express ourselves as a fundamental right of your property. Remember, Madison said you not only have rights in your property, you have property in your rights. So citizens have the constitutional right to decide what is best for them and their business. If it's a personal business, if it is not necessarily a private business, but a operated business for the public, whatever that business is, your family business, and how you think and how you want to adopt things. Now, these are fundamental rights of conscience, but we do have rights of standards. We have rights of decency. We have rights of, you know, not violating, you know, the rights of others, you know, such as, you know, supporting I have to go here, and I have to actually really kind of speak this, because these things have actually come before the Supreme Court, whether it be pornography, prostitution, whether it be, you know, sexual deviations and so forth. You do not have a right as a parent or as a person or as a citizen in a society to inflict those types of rights. It's one thing at an appropriate age as a parent to try to expose a child. But I am telling you that there's a lot of people that, one, they may not understand. They may not realize the damages or anything else. But I will tell you that during the sexual revolution, during the drugs and all of those types of things, there was not a lot of empirical data on what some of these things were going to do, especially when it came to drugs and drug influences and so forth. But we have a right and we have a responsibility to protect the innocents in our society. And we should never have allowed, this willy-nilly, ways of perverting, because what ended up happening, and this is how you see this, and this goes back to a plane ride I had. I was so appalled. I was sitting, and in front of me were two ladies, and I don't know what their affiliations were, religious or anything else. But this one lady was talking about her little son and how she just loved the fact that he liked to put on dresses. And it sounded like she was enabling this behavior. Friends, that's wrong. Parents should not be doing that. And that's one of the things that we have. I hate to inflict a theocracy. I really kind of like Madison. He really didn't want to walk, a fine line, but he had to. And so what we have to do is we have to come up with a way of making sure that we protect the right of conscience, but we also protect the right of innocence as well. Because I don't care what they're doing in the education system, and the way they've been teaching sex ed since the 50s has been the antithetical outcome of what we've been getting from what they've told us. In other words, they told us that, we're going to start teaching sex ed in the 50s because, we have to do something to address these unwanted pregnancies. Well, we've always had unwanted pregnancies. But the fact is, what they started injecting into the education system was sexual perversion and promoting deviations and promoting deviant behavior. And so going back to this conversation, when I heard this, I go, what kind of parent? I mean, these two ladies, they were actually a little bit younger than me. And I was, I think, in my 50s. I think they may have been in their 40s. And I can't tell you how appalled I was with this conversation. They were sitting in front of me, and I was so tempted to just take my hand and slap their backs of their heads the way they were promoting this concept of perverting this little child. Folks, we can't allow these types of things. We actually have to start taking a stand. Back in the day of our framers, and this is what I was trying to say, this is what I was really stumbling on at the very beginning, we were an enlightened society, and society recognized the importance of discipline. This is why they also had discipline for bankruptcy. If you went into bankruptcy, they had bankruptcy jails. Not just bankruptcy courts, but you went to jail for bankruptcy. If you had financial problems, it was considered a crime. It is a crime. Folks, as an enlightened society, we actually have to have laws that create the desire of discipline, because discipline is what makes us successful. The fact is, we have so many unsuccessful people today in our society is an indictment that we have lost all forms of enlightenment and have embraced debasement as we go into this nosedive spiral into the abyss of, no coming back. Folks, we're being played so much. The right of conscience of property is that fundamental. citizens have the right to constitutionally decide what is right for them and what is best for their business, as I said. The right to accept or refuse any government offering or service is ultimately the citizen's choice regardless of reason. It is referred to as a conscientious objection. Conscientious objection does not just apply to going in and providing, you know, services to killing people at war. It's not just a conscientious objector that I can't kill people. That's why, you know, have you noticed that the oath, the United States citizen, the oath of a United States citizen requires that you will serve your country as called for, even in non-combatant services. So in other words, they recognize within the oath of a citizen your conscientious right to not have to kill, but you do have a responsibility in supporting the Constitution. And therefore, everything that the federal government should be doing in the warfare or whatever it is must be in support of the Constitution. The question is, we stopped asking those questions as Vietnam ended and as we started moving down this path of exercising war powers, you know, against all of these nations, whether these nations were getting ready to crumble like Grenada when Reagan sent the Marines in, or whether, you know, it was Clinton going into Somalia, providing humanitarian services. Actually, what Clinton was doing was he was enslaving Somalia and some of the African states by going in there and saying, we'll feed you, but we're not going to teach you to fish, if you understand what I'm saying. It was a very evil turn of events with Bush and with the Clintons, with the following Bush, Obama. It has been a very pernicious and dark world that the federal government has started getting involved more and more in manipulating governments that way. Using a tax, if someone does not comply to, you know, their, you know, this thing, such as Obamacare, vaccinations, healthcare, whatever, using a tax to comply to this law is tantamount to a bill of attainder or punishment, which is a violation of the Constitution. So there are very specific topics, and I could extrapolate those, that everybody must be taught. You must understand why ex post facto laws are pernicious and evil. If everybody understood bills of attainder and ex post facto laws, then our government would not get away with the crap that they're doing. Taking something that is legal and then making it illegal is tantamount to an ex post facto law. Now, defining and basically going down the same path, we have to, and as I basically stated, we have to start defining bills of attainder and punishment. We absolutely have to do this so that everybody starts learning and understanding what these things are and the historical context behind bills of attainder and ex post facto laws. When you actually look at the ratification debates, they talked about how the king was using those very specific things. So this is why they were in the Constitution, prohibiting both the federal government and state governments from doing this. And guess what? Because we're none the wiser of what those things are, we don't even know they've been able to do it to us. Folks, it's our ignorance. We're the problem. So we actually have to have this clarity in defining exactly what these things are and why they can't do it. Then when they do it, we can recognize that they're doing something that they have no right to do. Now, the next thing that actually has to be addressed, and I'm going through the Constitution in ensuring that the whole concept of immigration is a person that seeks and desires to become a citizen and a participant in our constitutional government and our constitutional hybrid government of participating in liberty, in protecting and securing the rights not only of themselves but of others. So when we come back, we're going to talk about immigration, citizenship, as well as inhabitants and so forth. But we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so these defining bills of attainder and punishment and defining ex post facto laws has to be done at the state level, and the states actually have to make sure that the citizens understand this. I mean, it is very dubious when our government understands these things, but they actually use these things as tools against us, these bills of attainder and ex post facto laws. And we should have been protected from Obamacare. We should have been protected from vaccinations and all of these types of things, because they can't say that, you know, you have a choice on this. And now they say, well, now we have the right to force you. No, they don't. And so they cannot make something that was one legal, or they cannot take something, and because you choose not to, they can punish you for it. That is a violation of the Constitution and our civil rights. The next one that actually has to be kind of discussed, but it's not necessarily as important, but these are the different topics, and we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 topics before we get to the next big one. But these are constitutional topics that have to be brought up. Citizenship and naturalization and children born to non-citizens under the jurisdiction of a foreign nation. We must clarify the 14th Amendment. States have to do this. States have to say we cannot recognize any child that is born here that the parents, both parents, are non-citizens and subject to the jurisdiction of another nation. Whether you're here legally or not, you have to be a citizen before that child that you're bearing will become a citizen, or that child will have to go through the naturalization process like Kamala Harris. Kamala Harris has to go through the naturalization process before she can become a U.S. citizen. Before she can even become a politician, she has to do that. Appropriation and consensus needs to be, and actually not consensus, census. People need to understand what is the appropriation, or actually how they appropriate people based on the census. The clarity of that is essential. Am I coming clear on this? Probably not. Everybody's probably going, well, what's he talking about? We actually have to go through and delineate how people are counted for the census, because you have to be a U.S. citizen to vote. You cannot, we cannot appropriate for any non-citizen. I mean, the next step, because right now, California has over 11 million invaders in California, and they're receiving congressional seats for those invaders. The only reason California lost a couple of seats is because there's been that many people that have abandoned California in the last 10 years. That's why those seats went down and they got realigned to other states. Now, the fact is that the appropriation of representation, as well as the basis of the census, has to be clarified. See, Trump actually went down this path of trying to do this, but the states have to do this. This is all a part of the definitizing the Constitution. As they go through this, this is kind of hint, hint, wink, wink. This is all a part of Republic review. As the states start looking at saying, you know, we see it this way. We see it was clearly defined. It was delineated that you could not appropriate representation for non-U.S. citizens. Therefore, the census must operate on citizenship and identify and actually, you know, get substantial proof and evidence that these people that are being counted in this particular state are actual citizens. They have to have absolute proof. And so the states need to actually go through and do their own census to verify and confirm every person in that state is a U.S. citizen. Many states know where they've stretched these laws. But the problem is this, that when California legitimizes a invader and gives them a driver's license, that person can now leave out of California and move into another state. And all they have to do is exchange their driver's license, and they're considered a citizen. One of the things that has to occur for a U.S. citizen to really be a citizen, because it's a part of the naturalization process, you have to take English. You have to understand English, and you have to be able to speak English. Now, I think that we've gone down this path of even walking away from that. But how is it that we are creating a fair society when we're allowing anything other than English being the language of the nation? As a matter of fact, it is clearly stated in the California Constitution that English is the law of the land, that they can only print their government documents in English. And yet they're violating the California Constitution by stating that they can print, you know, all of these voter, you know, pamphlets and all their literature in Spanish and all these other languages. What is it? Are we a constitutional republic, or are we a, you know, a tyrannical government that actually throws us around at the whims of its desires? Because I think that's what we're facing today. Anyway, the next one is the judicial jurisdiction. Quote, arising under this Constitution, the laws of the United States, and the treaties made or which shall be made under their authority, close quote. We have to clarify that that means that the federal government's jurisdiction is directly tied to their enumerated powers. They cannot enter treaties. They cannot take on debt. They cannot do anything that is not a power that has been formally delegated to them. If they're spending money on something that they have no authority to do, they're defrauding the people, and they're defrauding possibly other nations. But I'm telling you, every nation that's been buying our debt is on board with basically undermining our government and trying to destroy our Constitution and our form of government, period. It's that simple. Now, the next one. What jurisdiction over crimes has been delegated to the general government to define and determine punishment within the Constitution and giving them jurisdiction over these actual quote-unquote crimes? It is clear. There's very little crime that they actually have control over. I think it's counterfeiting and treason. And then the crimes committed on the high seas and crimes committed against the laws of nations, those are not within our jurisdictional land. That's stuff that happens over on the international seas or stuff that happens out in other nations. So this is why we have to do this. This is, again, this is all kind of a part of Republic Review. And so the next thing is that we need to actually look, because we actually have a case of the Whiskey Rebellion and how they defined what those people were doing was treason. They pardoned them because these men were remorseful. And they acknowledged that what they were doing was wrong. And the two men that were convicted was pardoned by Washington instead of having these guys hanged. So we actually have to go through this because there's been way too many shenanigans in allowing these lawyers and these dubious people in saying, well, we don't consider that treason anymore. Technically, for you to be treasonous, you actually have to be working with an enemy that we've declared war against. What? Are you kidding me? How did they come up with these types of things? This is the watering down of the real intent of the Constitution and those definitions that were clearly provided. If you want to change it, that's okay. The mechanism to do so is a constitutional amendment, period. So to those people that say, oh, you know, the treason has been clearly defined. No, actually, that what they've done is they've perverted its absolute definitions, because the framers actually defined it as anybody, because it was treasonous to actually revolt against the constitutional laws of the land. That was considered an insurrection. And so the Whiskey Rebellion, that protests are considered an insurrection. Now, there's a constitutional process that we have a right to, that we can actually step in and say, hey, I think you don't have a right to protest, but you have a First Amendment right of petitioning government for the redress of grievances. If you believe what they're doing is unconstitutional, then you have all the power to go and force them to fix that problem. But you better be right, or if not, they'll come back and say, no, it's actually constitutional. We have the right clearly here to actually levy excise taxes, and this is an excise tax against liquor. Oh, okay. And so the way it was uniform is it wasn't uniform per state, but it was uniform per capita, because bottom line, you know, you can't go through and delineate to precisely how many, the percentage of people consuming hard liquor or the distilled liquors at that time, because it was a staple. Some people drink it, some people didn't drink it. Not everybody, but those numbers were, you know, pretty close going across the states. And in instituting that excise tax, it's clear. So having an excise tax today, if you had a, you know, like the state of Utah, where very few people drink in the state of Utah compared to all of the other states, well, how is an excise tax now uniform? Because it is a tax on those people who choose to do that, and those people who don't choose to do that don't pay those taxes. So there's an argument in saying, is this really a fair and uniform tax to apply? Everybody has cars. Anyway, we can go on and on and on, but we'll be back and redefining treason. We'll kind of wrap this up in our next episode. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you.